Okay, so we're in Chodesh Halvavos, Shar Avodas Elokim. In the Lev Tov edition, it's Pesh Resh Yud, Perek Revi, the fourth Perek. In the English edition, it's page 264. Okay, we're moving away from a long discussion that we've had the previous week, previous weeks, many weeks. And we're moving on to another discussion, a very fundamental, famous point of the Chodesh Halvavos. Okay. So the Chodesh Halvavos begins like this. He says, it's worth our while to expound on the nature of the Torah. The Chelkei HaTorah. How it breaks things down. Meaning by the Torah, he's referring to what we've been referring to all these weeks is the externally imposed system. The system that Hashem imposes on us from high, as opposed to what we've been calling the internally driven system, what comes from within a person himself. We spent a lot of time showing how both of them, we need this combination in order to reach a properly grounded, a properly based, yet fully rounded out system of Avodas Hashem that enables us to, on the one hand, every person, regardless of level, has a very, very profound basis with which to work. And on the other hand, enables you to reach heights that can be very individual, very unique to the person himself. So now he's going to spend some time now just explaining the system that Hashem provided for us. So, Roy Lonu Levar Tzuras HaOratayriya, we should spend some time explaining the nature of the Torah, the Chelkei HaTorah, its different parts. Umalas anshei hachochma utchunosam ve'emunosam bo ve'kabalosam oitzo. We should also spend some time explaining the different levels of people in terms of the way they relate to the Torah, in terms of their level of belief in the Torah, in terms of the way they accept it and apply it to their lives. Vayimar. So again, he always, as is his derech, he starts all the way from the beginning. What exactly is the nature of this Torah, this externally imposed system? It is a vision granted by Hashem to a mortal human being, as in Moshe Rabbeinu, in which Hashem outlined what pleases him, what pleases him in terms of what we do. Legamlam, and the purpose of his giving us this system is legamlam al kabbalasa gmul ba'ilam azil ba'ilam haba. The reason that he gave us this system is because he wants to reward us for it in olam hazeh and in olam haba, chesed unedava v'toiva. With pure grace and kindness, meaning as follows. The Torah includes many commands, many restrictions, but the purpose really is to understand that this whole system is simply given to us as the ultimate of Hashem's chesed. Hashem created the world in order to do chesed. Hashem created the world the way it's stated in the Sfarim is Chayk HaToiv LeHeitiv. Since Hashem's primary characteristic is chesed, and this is what he wants to do. He created a world, a very multifaceted creation, in which he can do that chesed. He was looking for, I wouldn't say people, I would say creatures, beings, to give his benefit to. So he created a very, very great creation with very, very many different types of beings upon whom he can bestow his chesed. And that happens at very many levels. It begins with the insects, even smaller than that, and it moves through all the different forms of life. It culminates with people. Hashem does chesed at very different levels, but Really, the greatest level of chesed that Hashem has to offer, so to speak, is the chesed that He did with Bnei Yisrael, with the Yisrael, in which He gave us, He decided that whereas you have the chesed that He did with the antelope, where He gave them plenty of grass in the savannah that they can eat, that not too hard for them to find food. They have to contend with some predators, but even that is for their benefit because the predators keep the species from multiplying too much and using up the resources for the rest of the species. And He equipped them with all kinds of other things that enhance their existence. Yeah, Hashem is doing chesed to all of His creations. But really the purpose of it all, Hashem is the ultimate meitiv, the ultimate benefactor. And the greatest level of it all is the chesed that He did for the Ben Yisrael, in which He put him into position to be able to process his own neshama through the Torah. And thereby, first of all, to lead a very meaningful and fulfilling life in this world, and to ultimately reach the ultimate good that could possibly be in the next world. So really, the duties that Hashem imposed on us, the Torah, is the process of the greatest heights of Hashem's chesed system. He puts us through this system, not for a very long time, 120 years, it should be more than that, Bezos Hashem, 150 years, not for a very long time, in order to bring a person to the state of being able to be a recipient of the greatest chesed imaginable, that any chesed that you see around you in the world pales in comparison with. But okay, this is not really the subject here. The subject is the following. The Torah divides people's actions into three classes, three categories. Tzivui, there are the things that you must do. Azhara, those are the things that you're not allowed to do. Umutar, and then there's the area that we call rishus, things that you can do or you can choose not to do them. Right? You have a chiyuv to eat matzah on Pesach. It's prohibited. Eating pork is a no-no. That's prohibited. And then there's having a tomato and cheese sandwich on Tuesday afternoon. That's a rishus. It's neither a command, it's not something you have to do, and it's not a prohibition, it's not something you're allowed to do. So it divides into three categories. What you must do, what you may not do, and the things that you can choose to do if you want. Now, Chavos HaVavos, in his very methodical style, continues and says, the things that you must do also divide into two categories. The category of things that you have to do, that Hashem expects of you, and these divide into two categories. Echad mehem mitzvah salvavos. One is the inner mitzvahs. Veim hadvarim, meaning the things that we do internally. Like, I'm not going to read through the list inside, but this is emuna. You know, setting your sights exclusively on Hashem, trust in Hashem, accepting everything He brings on you willingly, believing in His Torah, being in awe of Him, noting His chasadim, noting His chachma, etc. These are all internal things, mitzvahs of the mind and the heart. Vasheni, category number two of the things you must do are mitzvahs halavavos v'avarim yachad, the things that we do with our limbs along with our hearts. He's kind of inserting here parenthetically an important point. But if we'll say it simply, you're the external mitzvahs, the mitzvahs that you do with your body, right? Lighting Shabbos candles, wearing tzitzis, eating matzah on Pesach, etc. These are external mitzvahs. But he defines these as mitzvahs that involve the body and the mind and heart, because really, that's really where you want to get. And Chavos HaVavos is hammering this home throughout the Sefer, where even the mitzvahs that you do with your body are not just external actions, but they are being fueled by strong inner feelings of love, of faith, etc. But whatever the case is, there are the mitzvahs, the internal mitzvahs, and there are the external mitzvahs. Okay. Then you have the category of the things you're not allowed to do. Prohibition. And these also divide into two categories. Echad mehem choyves al vavis. One is the internal prohibitions. Things that should not be going on inside of you, in your mind and heart. Vasheni. And number two are choyves avarim, the external prohibitions, things that you should not be doing with your body. Okay, the latter we're very familiar with, all the things you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to say, you're not allowed to do, okay? But it's interesting to quickly move through, even though this is parenthetical here, to quickly move through the inner prohibitions, because there's some interesting insights here. Azhara shebechoyves alvavis, the prohibitions that apply internally, the things that should not be going on in your heart and mind, are kashituf imabare baseser. It is joining someone with Hashem in your heart. What does that mean? If we understand it simply, in a simple level, what it means is that you have someone that you worship alongside Hashem. Believe in Hashem, and you also believe in, I don't know, some idol. But in the Chavis Alvavis, we'll see, he elaborates on this more in Shabbat Bitochen, he takes this concept, we're all very familiar with the fact that you're only supposed to worship Hashem, you're not supposed to worship anybody else. To us it seems like, you know, this is straightforward, a prohibition on idolatry, it's not relevant to us, no one's thinking of doing it. It's one of the things that we can write off. You know, the Israel of Avodah Zarah, the prohibition of Avodah Zarah, is not something that we really have to be working on. But the Chavis Halvavis, in his very profound way, very much turns into something that we do need to be working on. And he says that having another God, on its more subtle level, means having somebody else who you have an agenda in life to find favor with for material purposes. Meaning, you know, if you have a spouse, you're supposed to love them, and you're supposed to, yes, you're supposed to try to please them, but it's for the purpose of pleasing them, because it's an end in itself. But when there's somebody that you feel, oh, I have to be on their good side in order for my own purposes, for my welfare, if this person isn't pleased with me, you know, I might get in trouble, I might lose benefits, you know, I have my rich cousin that I want to make sure to stay on his good side, so that should it ever be relevant, I'll have an address to turn to, and therefore a lot of my life is focused on keeping him pleased, currying his favor. And certainly when it comes to mitzvahs, if a person is doing mitzvahs because he wants to people please, the Chavis Halvavis relates to that as a subtle form of having another God, a subtle form of worshipping another. We'll see about that later, but this is interesting how he includes that in the internal prohibitions, meaning your actions should not be motivated by a need to please anyone other than Hashem, unless it's within the context of your service of Hashem. Again, of course, you know, you want to be pleasing, you want to be pleasing to the people around you, but within the context of your service of Hashem, not as an end of itself. That, you know, that I must keep in this person's good graces, because I have to keep in Hashem's good graces because I don't want to go to Gehenna. And I also have to make sure to keep in, you know, Uncle Charlie's good graces, so that, you know, I'll have, you know, the fat checks will keep coming. To turn that into an agenda, the Chavis Halvavis considers quite problematic. If you want to be nice to Uncle Charlie, it's always good. You should be nice to anybody in your life. But not to make it an agenda of people-pleasing. Vachoinef, flattery. This is the same concept, the same idea. I want to stress this. We're told that chanufa, flattery is a bad midah. This can be very misunderstood, because, you know, I've heard people say this, and it's like so, it's like mamish turning things upside down. You don't want to give a compliment. Giving a compliment is flattery. That's pashut not true. Giving a compliment is chesed. I'll say even more than that. Person might say that giving an insincere compliment is flattery. That's also not true. Giving an insincere compliment is also chesed if it's done right. When a person's purpose in giving a compliment, when a person's purpose in making somebody else feel good is because he wants to be kind, he wants to give another person a good feeling, that's not the bad mida of flattery that we're talking about. That is the mida of chesed. Saying a good word is one of the most powerful and easily done forms of chesed that we could do. When we talk about flattery as a bad mida, it means a couple of things which tie into what we were just talking about beforehand. One level of it will be flattery for your own purposes, meaning you want to make this person feel good so that you'll be able to get out of him what you want. But besides that, it's also like we've been discussing before. If you make a point of flattering somebody just because you want to stay on the good side, because you have to make sure that you'll be, whether it's relating to your job, to benefits you hope to get from this person, this, Hashem says, is considered a conflict with your trust in me. Okay. This is another very interesting point that, to an extent, threads the whole Chavis Alvavis. Liking to do something that Hashem warned against. Meaning, again, we're talking about internal prohibition, things that shouldn't be going on inside your heart and mind. So, it's not just, we see this in Chavis Alvavis, it's not just that if Hashem says not to do something, you have to make sure not to do it. But, you know, really, I'd love to. A person should strive to get to a place where he has no desire or interest to do something that Hashem dislikes. Meaning, it's not just about not doing it. It's about sharing Hashem's sentiments. This is a higher level. It's not something that we're in one moment. But it's a higher level. It's about sharing Hashem's sentiments, so to speak. If Hashem dislikes it, I find it repulsive as well. And no, there isn't something that Hashem dislikes, but I have fond feeling towards it, yet I refrain because I know that Hashem doesn't want me to do it. Again, there may be many things that we feel attracted to, that we have fond feelings toward, etc., but we don't do because we know you're not supposed to do it. And we're not saying that overnight you have to change your feelings about these things, but this is a very Chashiva agenda in Chavis Alvavis, that as part of our life's work, we want to be getting to a place where not only don't we do what Hashem dislikes, but we also dislike what Hashem dislikes. Now, I want to explain this a little bit more, because there's a very famous Chazal that people may think are a conflict to what we're saying. There's a famous Chazal that says about eating non-kosher food, that don't say, I don't eat this because I dislike it, because it's repulsive to me. Say, no, I do like it. I would like to eat it. But Hashem said not to, and therefore I don't. Meaning it's a higher level. If a person has a natural dislike for lobster, and then you have another person, oh, really does like lobster, but he refrains because Hashem said not to eat it, Chazal are telling us that the latter is the greater level. How does that work with what Chavis Alvavis is telling us now? So there's a fine distinction. If you have a person who naturally doesn't like lobster and therefore he doesn't eat it, you know what? That's the case with many of us. You know you're not allowed to eat mosquitoes? Not allowed to eat mosquitoes. But I don't think anybody on the phone, or even anybody who's not on the phone right now, has ever been truly tempted at the sight of a mosquito and really had to hold themselves back in order to make sure they wouldn't eat it. But you know what? You don't get as much credit for that as for not eating something that really does appeal to you. But what's the idea? The idea is that if something you have a natural dislike for something, you don't necessarily get credit for that. You get more credit for saying, you know, this is something I really would like to eat. You know, a mosquito and a spider, perhaps not. But you know what? That sizzling piece of meat is actually quite appealing, but I'm not going to eat it because Hashem said not to eat it. You get more reward for the latter. But then there's another level. And that is, it repulses me, not because it naturally repulses me. It's not like a spider. This is something that's actually very tasty. But once I have grown close to Hashem, once I've really gained an appreciation for Hashem, the knowledge that He is repulsed by it makes me feel turned off as well. It makes me feel like I can't bear the thought of eating it. Not because this is something that naturally doesn't appeal to me, but because I reach a level that something that I know will repulse someone who I love, after living with them for long enough, I feel a natural aversion to doing it as well. This is something that people can experience in their own personal relationships. People can experience it in their own personal relationships. Try to think of an example of, let's say, some sort of music that you know your spouse really doesn't like. Now, you don't mind it. You like it. But when you're around your spouse and you've already seen how much it bothered them other times, you know, and it starts playing and your spouse is there, you instinctively feel like, oh yeah, I want that off. You feel uncomfortable with it playing right now. Not because the music itself bothers you, but because of the fact that you are sensitive and attuned to the extent that it's not just an issue of knowledge. I know that that person doesn't like it and therefore I don't want it on. But after living with that person long enough and being very attuned to them, I feel a natural aversion. I automatically feel not at ease and even distress when it's on in that person's presence. Kind of like it's another an extension of the famous story of Reb Aryeh Levin, right? You know the story of Reb Aryeh Levin, where he came with his wife to the doctor's office, and when the doctor asked, "What's the problem?" Sir Reb Aryeh Levin said, "My wife's leg is hurting us." He was expressing something very, very profound. That if his wife was in pain, it hurt him too. Not because his leg was hurting. He didn't feel anything physical. But the fact he was so, him and his wife were so close and so attuned to each other that he was in distress when his wife was in pain. So this is the type of level that we want to reach with Hashem as well. That if we're things that we know that Hashem is repulsed by, the thought of doing it repulses us as well, even if naturally this could be something that I would theoretically enjoy had it not be forbidden. Okay. We move further. Now, that's a big subject, and we'll touch on it more as of Hashem as we move through Chavis HaFavis. We move further. Vagaiva, Vagoiva, Vagoin, all forms of conceit and haughtiness. Uvzois b'nei Adam, looking down on people, belittling people. He's not talking about disgracing them openly, because that would already be, again, let's remember, we're talking about internal prohibitions, things that should not be going on inside of you. So when he says, uvzois b'nei Adam, disgracing people, he means in your mind, to be looking down on them. We want to be reaching a level where we learn to appreciate every person, whatever his level is. And also to belittle the words of the Nevi'im, what they express from Hashem to us. In other words, we do not want to be in a place of feeling scorn at Torah teaching. This also he considers something that should not be going on in our heart or mind. Also, for a person to feel, I won't use the word repulsed, it's a strong word, but to find the way I'd say it, the good people, the bland, while he finds the wrong types of people exciting and fun to be with. It comes back to the same point before, that it's not just that we want to do what Hashem, we want to refrain from what Hashem says not to do, but we want to actually identify with it and feel those sentiments also. And therefore, you know, you see a tzaddik, you see a person who is totally dedicated to Hashem's service. He's like a goody-goody, you know, not the type of, not my cup of tea. And he kind of look down at the person. You appreciate that he's doing the right thing, yeah, right? But this is a Nebuchadnezzar kind of person. This is a bland kind of person. Not a person I'd be interested in spending time with. Whereas, you can have people who are busy doing the wrong thing. I'm not going to do the things that they do, but These are the people that it's fun to be around. These are the people whose company I enjoy. This, once again, is considered the wrong thing going on in your heart and mind. Hashem wants you not just to do what He says and not to do what He says not to do, but He wants you to actually share those sentiments. He wants you to feel, kiviyachol, so to speak, the same way He feels about them. I'll give you an example. There are a few examples of this, but I'll give you one example that Rabbi Avigdor Miller gave. The Torah says an eye for an eye, an arm for an arm, a leg for a leg, a tooth for a tooth, right? Which, taken literally, means that if somebody knocks somebody else's eye out, his eye should be gouged out. Now, we all know that actually is not the halacha. The halacha actually is that if a person chops off another person's arm, he has to pay. The arm for an arm means he has to compensate for the arm by paying the value of the arm. However, that's assessed in Beis Din. So the question is, so why does the Torah express it that way? If the Torah really means that it should always be monetary compensation, why express it in that, like, sensational manner? An eye for an eye. Sounds so dramatic when it's not even what the Torah means. Rabbi Avigdor Miller said something very profound, which is exactly the point that the Chovos HaLevavos is making right now. Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, the Torah is not just teaching you what to do. The Torah is also teaching you how you should feel about things. If you see somebody who gouged out another person's eye, your sentiment should be, the Torah is telling you what to feel, your sentiment should be one of such disgust and repulsion. Your sentiment should be, this person deserves to have his eye taken out. But you know what? The Torah went easy on him and said, a payment will be good enough. But an eye for an eye is something that the Torah wants you to feel. A reaction that the Torah wants you to have to such violent behavior on the part of another person. I remember when I was in school, we had a teacher, not a very Torah-dicker person, teacher of secular studies. I don't think he was religious at all. And a fist fight broke out between two guys. Two guys got into a fist fight. And one of them hit the other in the face. And the teacher got up, and he had to break it up. And it's part of his job was to break up the fight. So he broke up the fight, but he looked at the guy who had just slugged the other guy in the face and said, that was a good uppercut. And I said, like, with a little wry smile. This is exactly what the Torah is trying to preclude. Here's a guy who, he knew that he had to break it up. He couldn't allow a fist fight to be going on in his class. But Lamaisi, he was enjoying it, and he actually identified with the guy who had given a good punch. Right? This is what the Torah is saying, no. When you encounter a situation where one person broke another person's leg, so don't give him a wink, say, okay, you got to pay the money, what can we do? But you know what? You did a good job on the guy. The attitude should be one of disgust. The attitude should be one of, how could a human being do this to another person? This person really deserves to have his own legs broken. But the Torah went easy on him. That's the idea. Hashem wants you not just to do and to refrain. Hashem wants you to like and dislike. Hashem wants you to develop His value system. Hashem wants you, so to speak, to think the way He thinks, to feel the way He feels. We've touched on this a number of times, but Hashem wants you not only to keep the mitzvahs, but to sense their beauty, to become attached to them. And Hashem wants you not only to refrain from averus, but He wants you to grow to feel an aversion to those averus. And in the same way, Hashem wants you to love and feel a real affinity for people who have His value system, people who are living the way He wants them to live. Hashem wants you to grow to a place where those are the people whose company you enjoy, those are the people you want to spend time with. And Hashem wants you to go to a place where there are people who do not behave in the way that Hashem approves of, who don't talk in the way that Hashem approves of, whose lifestyle is not what Hashem approves of. These are not the people whose company you enjoy. You may have to sometimes be in their company anyways. But those are not the people whose company you enjoy. Those are not the people who you really really enjoy being with. That's where you get your kicks. So that's another example of inner prohibitions that he's calling. As we're seeing now, what he's calling inner prohibitions are really long programs of working on ourselves. They're not simple things to automatically come to and feel. But this is what he's telling us. Vakina vachemda, of course, envy, coveting other people's things. Va'avas hara libnei adam, liking to see other people suffer. Viskatzef al gzeras habayre, and getting angry at Hashem's decisions. Va'abei kaze, etc. So those are the inner prohibitions, things that shouldn't be going on inside your heart and mind. Achoivetze avarim, what are the external prohibitions? These are famous, we're familiar with many of them. Ashituf imabare bagalui, right? It's forbidden. Open idolatry, falsely swearing, all kinds of falsehood, slander, eating the wrong things, the wrong kinds of relations, murder, theft, etc. These are famous, we know, the prohibitions, things you're not allowed to do. So, we've discussed the first two categories, right? There are the commands, things you must do, and there we have the internal commands, as in things that are supposed to be going on inside your mind and heart. We have the prohibitions, which also divide into the two parts, things that should not be going on inside your mind and heart, and things that should not be going on with your body. And now we move on to the third category, which is really where he's headed now. We're already toward the end of this year, but this is really where he's headed. Then we have the category of things that are neither commands nor prohibitions. You can do them if you want. If you don't, you don't have to. Like we said before, you know, eating an apple at 11 in the morning. You want to eat it, eat it. You don't want to eat it, don't eat it. It isn't a mitzvah or an avera. So here he says that in a general way, this also has to be broken down. Because the category of permitted things is not one all-inclusive category. Also, when it comes to permitted activities, it breaks into three categories. Permitted activities basically includes most of our material life. Eating, sleeping, relationships, business, working for a living, etc. Clothing, shelter. So he says these break into three categories also. Deha sipuk is living in an adequate way. Eating, sleeping, relationships, dressing, working for a living is done in a balanced way. Ariboy, then there is doing it in an excessive way. Vakitzur, and then there's doing it in an inadequate way. I'll give examples. But the general idea is that our material life can either be balanced, it can be overly indulgent, or it can be inadequate. A person doesn't eat enough, doesn't sleep enough, doesn't pursue parnasa adequately, or a person overdoes all these things. So now, he says, Deha sipuku, when we talk about balance, literally, Deha sipuku means doing what's necessary. It means doing what you need to do in order to have a healthily functioning body and in order to be living a properly tended to life. Eating and drinking to a healthy degree. Malbush, putting effort into dressing adequately. Machse, putting effort into having a decent home, decent living conditions. Vadibor, speech, socializing. This is also an important material function that also can either be overdone, underdone, or done in a balanced way. Mashu tzorich elav v'seder inyonav, ufeuloisav uschayroisav. A speech that's needed in order to keep life going, in terms of social life, in terms of business, etc. Vishtamsha bekominei tnuoisav, and all of your other functions and activities. All of your different material activities can be done in a way that enables you to live a balanced, comfortable, not overly indulgent, but not inadequate material life. Okay, that is category number one, doing it in a balanced way. Then you have, skipping a little bit, v'chelek hasheni, then there is indulging. V'hu avor de hasipuk, gvul de hasipuk al ha'tosefes. And that is going, passing the line from living an adequate existence to an indulgent, excessive existence, asher in tzerich bala adam, that man has no need for. K'ma ha'ribuy min ha'macho v'ha'mishte. Which, the first example will be in food and drink. Ukvar hizir mimenu achocham ba'amro, Shlomo HaMelech, in his wisdom, admonished us against this when he said, Al tihi b'soy ve'yayin b'zeilei basa lamay. Do not be the glutton who is busy drowning himself in wine and gorging himself with meat. V'chen sheyaflig v'hiskashet b'malbushim. The same goes for dress. A person gets overly obsessed with his clothing. A person has to dress adequately, also in terms of, besides just warmth, and besides just sneeze, in terms of having a dignified look. You have to dress nicely, you have to dress in a way that's put together, that makes you look dignified, but then a person can get into being busy, getting overly into it, overly into his clothing. The same can apply for living conditions. A person can have a comfortable home, and then a person can go overboard in terms of fancy, all the latest in renovations, all the latest in interior and exterior design, etc. Umoysri advarim. The same goes for talk. Talking, socializing. Small talk is a necessity. It's part of our emotional well-being. But here also, it can very much be overdone. Now, we're just throwing out examples right now. We'll be elaborating on it, Bezos Hashem, as we go on, and how to get these balances right, and that does not involve over-obsessing. We'll see. But this is also something that can be overdone. When a person talks without any control, I'm not talking about specifically prohibited speech. We're talking about when speech itself is something that a person indulges in, without any sort of, you know, not on top of how much am I doing it, am I doing it too much, etc. That also is an area that can reach a situation where a person is a little too indulgent, where it's already going overboard. Now, all these things have to be well explained when we talk about eating too much rather than eating adequately. Right, does that mean that you have to, when you sit down for a meal, you have to start figuring out exactly how many spoonfuls do I need for my well-being? And perhaps the piece of chicken that I took is not really what I need. I could have made done if it was a forkful or two less. That's not what we're talking about. We'll see. But we're introducing the understanding that there is such a thing as overdoing it, which, yeah, we all are familiar with that. We'll see, Bezos Hashem, what this means for us practically. Okay, we will end here, Bezos Hashem.